way, entrepreneurs, if you've struggled with trying to figure out how to cultivate a great following on social media, our replay guest on Amplify Your Business was, what was it, episode 22? It was with Yellowed Ice Cream. These guys are knocking it out of the park when it comes to social media. They, you know, really curated a great following, a great community on social media, and it's really paying dividends for their business. So we break that down, and we also talk about ghost kitchens. We talk about some of the pivoting that's going on in the early days of the pandemic, and really what the future of food service maybe is going to be. So anyway, it's a really interesting episode. Lots to unpack there. Check it out. I think you're going to really like it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Amplify Your Business. My name is Lance Johnson. I want to welcome you to this edition, which is kind of another special one in which we are taking a look at an entrepreneur's story or a journey that two local entrepreneurs here in the Edmonton area have embarked upon. And I'm very excited to hear what they have to say about their experiences, the lessons they've learned, which I hope then will also help you guys as you are on your existing entrepreneur journey too. So welcome to the show, Aylin and Jason from Yellowed Ice Cream.
Hi.
So why don't you... start out maybe by just giving us a little bit of your background and where the idea to start Yellowed came up.
Sure. Well, I am a teacher by trade and a previous bakery shop owner in Edmonton. And
I'm a journeyman plumber gas fitter, so it was obviously the next logical step was ice cream.
totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Our story is actually very non-conventional, if you want to say, in terms of how our business got started. It got started because we were just simply introducing Filipino ice cream flavors to our daughters.
Yeah.
And you know, we were bored in the winter time and thought, hey, we could make better ice cream than the store-bought kind. And we went onto our community swap page and found a $20 ice cream machine that we plugged in and just tried some fun recipes and went from there. And then our daughter basically said, our youngest, she's like,
you guys, we should just open an ice cream shop. So
we're pretty jump on the idea bandwagon. Yeah. I guess you could say.
So your daughter is the one who's like, hey, we need to start a business. So she's the entrepreneur then, maybe, eh?
Yeah.
She gives us the idea and we said, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And then this was around Christmas time.
Yeah, just before New Year's, I think. Yeah.
Of 2018 would that have been?
Yes, it was going into the year of 2018.
So yeah, the end of 2017. Yeah.
Okay.
So January 1st, actually, 2018, Jason and I were just driving around looking for possible spaces for an idea. We weren't exactly sure what we were doing. Just seeing what was out there, just exploring the idea, and the space just happened to be available, and we called, and a month later, it was ours. So that was February, and then we opened by June. So it was very quick. You know, we did do some crowdfunding with some friends and family. We took that upon ourselves. We didn't do the traditional Kickstarter or those other platforms for raising money. We just decided we would do it on our own and maybe not have somebody else take a cut of what we could do. I knew that the negative side of that is not using a platform would be harder to reach people, I suppose, but we spread it far and wide and our family and friends spread it far and wide and we were able to raise a little bit of money to get started, which was good.
Yeah, well, and that's actually where my first exposure to you guys came in, actually, was at those early stages when you were pushing some messaging out on social media about how you were wanting to start this store location. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about all the different flavors that you guys were making in your kitchen with that small ice cream maker, yeah. I suppose, right? And so that story was one of the things that actually, you know, spread really quickly on social media. And mm-hmm. so I'd like to hear a little bit more about that and the role that social media had in the starting of your business, basically on the funding side, but then also mm-hmm. later on, which we can get to in a minute too.
From the very beginning, actually, it was quick. Social media moved quicker than actually we could probably keep up with it on our own. There was an incredible amount of interest, I think, because people saw, oh gosh, what is this? There is nothing mm-hmm. like this. And it was very exciting. So it pushed us actually along very quickly.
Extremely quickly. We were playing catch up a lot mm-hmm. in that time.
So we hadn't even developed recipes completely or flavor ideas completely. Jason pretty much built up the space on his own. So while he's doing that, I'm trying to figure out how to make ice cream.
So there you guys are in the early days. You're like, hey, we got an idea, or our daughter has an idea that we should be starting a ice cream store. So we push it out into social media and say, hey, we're going to do this. You don't even have recipes really fine-tuned. You don't have this face done, but everybody's jumping on board and getting excited and contributing to the fundraising campaign and then obviously getting behind you and really mm-hmm. encouraging you, which is really remarkable, right? So the market basically was speaking before you guys were even ready.
For sure.
Yeah.
We had maybe like 4 ice cream flavors that we knew for sure we were going to do.
Yeah.
And then very soon realized, oh, we should probably think of a few more if we want to keep going.
So what do you think was the reason for all of that social media success or interest? Was it because of the tight community that you already kind of had around you? Or was it because of the unique flavors and just the unique concept? What was the real catch, I guess, that captivated everybody's attention?
I think it was is both for sure. The uniqueness of the ideas and then the people who surrounded us who spread it for us. excuse me. But I think more so was the story. We didn't realize people were just really genuinely interested in who we are because we came out of nowhere. And they wanted to know. People thought when we first opened the doors that we were a chain or a big business. Even before we actually got through our first or second month. So when they realized it was just a small family, they almost invested themselves even more so. So that really helped for sure.
So it's your personal story is what you're giving the credit to mostly then, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry, Jason, go ahead.
It's definitely become that for sure. Personal mm-hmm. connection between our customers and, now we call a lot of them friends. It's really turned into that. We have so many people that come to the window and they're just like, oh, you're working. Like this is not a chain. This is not you're here, you're doing this every day. So it's been great. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way since day one. We know hundreds of people by their first name, and but not by their first name, what they ordered last. it's pretty great mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. So how would you guys describe your ice cream then? Because it is very unique. So if you take a stab at describing it or comparing it to, you know, the traditional North American ice cream, what would you guys say?
Well, first it's soft serve. So I think, everybody was surprised. Everybody's used to hard scooped ice cream. Mm-hmm. So to come out with a soft serve shop that's not just chocolate or vanilla, I think that was really interesting to people. It took a long time for people to wrap their minds around the fact that we were actually making soft serve.
Yeah.
And they, you know, because it is just a general, either you pump a flavor in after the fact, or it is just chocolate or vanilla typically. So it was, that's definitely what makes us different for sure. And then in terms of the flavors, they're just really hard to find flavors.
Yeah, most people don't realize, but our flavors, the reason we rotate often is because it's very, very hard for us to find the ingredients to craft our flavors continuously. There are flavors that we would love to have for longer than 2 weeks, but we just can't find the ingredients. And the ones that we do hold on to are our number one ice cream is our ube, our sweet purple yam. That ends up at certain times of year costing us a premium because we're paying in certain months of the year almost double and or triple the amount for the fresh purple yam. So it's so I guess that would be part of the flavor choices, and the reason we've got to experience so many is because we're kind of in a corner with some of the ingredients that we have.
Well, and so it also plays along with what we see in a lot of other businesses finding success in that. And I think of the beer market, actually, the craft beers, is this continuous rotation of the taps where they're doing these small batches. And so you kind of have to keep going back and experimenting, or it pulls you back because every month it's something somewhat different, or at least there's a couple on the menu that are a little different. It's the same with you guys. And so that novelty of what is going to be new captures a lot of people's attention, I'd imagine, and has them coming back because they just never know what they're going to find. That's again, going to be just a really short run exclusive opportunity.
That's right. And a lot of times people ask us, so what flavor's coming up next? And I'll say, I'll tell you the morning that I change it, because sometimes we truly don't know. Sometimes it's because we don't know. Sometimes it's because we can't find the ingredients we want to use. Yeah. And sometimes the idea that we originally had was just not working out. And sometimes it's because we've had no time to actually decide. So...
Yeah, well, and that kind of returns back to your roots at the beginning, where it's like, we don't even have our recipes nailed down yet, and we're opening an ice cream store. And so there's a certain number of them that are always going to be like that, I suppose, on an ongoing basis because of those unique flavors. Now, you guys have got some crazy flavors, though. Like some of the things that you see, like the ingredients, it's just like, oh my God, I can't imagine that actually working in ice cream, and it does somehow. And so I can't imagine what the test kitchen is. Who's the test subject? Like, is it you, Jason, or is it the kids?
It's everybody. Our staff, mostly, they love it. They love the days when we're trying something new. But most of our recipe ideas come from Jason. He grew up with his grandfather owning the first Chinese restaurant out in Thunder Bay, so he knows all the flavors and all the unique things, more so than I do, actually, I would say.
It's lots of fun for sure. The opportunity to try different things, one of the most popular currently, or two I guess, is the Toyo, which is a soy sauce ice cream. We have been wanting to try it for so long. I know in the test kitchen when we tried it, I tasted it first, and I was like, oh man, that sure does taste like salted caramel. Mm-hmm. And we tested it against about 15 of our staff, and literally only two got it right. They said, oh, that has hints of soy sauce. So we rolled with that, and it's very, very popular. We added crispy chow mein noodles covered in caramel into it. Another very extremely popular one is our black sesame with our salted duck egg, the Philippine salted duck egg.
Yeah.
And it truly is a wonderful flavor. I mean, we tell people all the time, it's not fear factor. Don't let the menu description scare you away. Just give it a try. If you don't like it, it's just ice cream. We can fix it. We don't want anybody walking away from ice cream not happy or satisfied. And I don't think we've ever had anybody they'll taste it and they'll just be like, wow, that is delicious. Like, I just, so it's we use our voice a lot. We've almost lost our voice quite a few times in the past couple of years explaining and taking the time to make sure people are comfortable with their choices, but everybody ends up in enjoying the ice cream no matter what.
Yeah, and that's the one, the duck egg one is the one that I was referencing. Was it like there's some crazy ingredients where you look at that and you're just like, oh man, like I don't know about that. So yeah, it's really cool. And I like that you brought in the reference to Fear Factory, because that's what I was kind of thinking the test kitchen is all about. Yeah.
It's funny to us because they're just normal flavors to us and to a lot of people that we work with. And to people who are new, who are coming up into the shop or to the window, and they have no idea, and we can see the confusion. But one of our, I think our strongest points is that we do take that time and describe it in ways that would be, in words that would be familiar, and get people to try new things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously not every flavor is for everyone, but...
But we pride ourselves that there's something for everyone at our shop. So there is two ends of the spectrum, and there's something for everyone. But it just a lot of people who try the more adventurous flavors, they enjoy them, and it's what they come back for. We now see, I like to joke in the beginning, we've had a lot of older people come into the shop 70s, 80s throughout the last 2 years, and they just be like, well, what is it? It's sweet purple yam, it's ube, it's our number one. And they're like, ah, and then they try it and then they'll come back. So they'll be on an afternoon walk and they'll be doing it for us. They'll be pointing at the menu saying, it's just ube, just try it, it's okay, and you'll love it. And then they come back and so on. It's pretty special for sure.
And so, yeah, I think that when it comes to your guys' success, one of the reasons why people get so excited about it or are talking about you so much is because of those unique flavors. Because if I was going to buy a pint of ice cream and share it with somebody who comes over to visit, or, you know, I bring it into the office for the staff or whatever, it's so unique where it's, again, you got to try this because of this flavor, or you have to, like, you'd never believe how good this tastes, or have a taste of this. And then afterwards, after they've tasted it, it's like, yeah, you know, there's duck egg in that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely talking points for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's really cool. So, okay, so you guys start. Let's just go back to the story or the timeline a little bit. So you take out the lease in February. You open in June. And then you go through the summer. Summers are great for ice cream, typically. What happens that first winter? Because I'd imagine there must have been some apprehension as to, okay, well, how many people are going to be buying ice cream through the winter months and so on. So tell me a little bit of how that first winter experience was.
So in our, we did have somewhat of a business plan with projections, obviously unknown because we had no idea if people were going to come in the wintertime and buy ice cream. And they did. So it was really good. Obviously it was never as busy as it was in the summertime with the long lineups. But it was busy enough to keep us going, and it.
We were so humbled. Mm-hmm. Day after day, we were speechless more often than not. I mean, we would be standing in the shop, we would be working, wondering every day if it was, and then people would just start to show up. I mean, this is a shop that's maybe the space for. Customers is like maybe an 8x10. So there would be nights, I say it all the time, on Fridays, Saturdays, Thursday nights, where it would look like a nightclub in there. There would be quite literally 30 people jam-packed in the winter in minus 20 the weather, eating ice cream like this, holding their ice cream cones, because there's no room to turn. People are meeting people, talking about the ice cream. The windows are sweating. It was unbelievably humbling. I just the local support in this city is truly incredible.
Okay, so that actually raises an interesting potential concern coming into this coming winter. So for those who are watching this archive version of this episode. We're filming this right now on September 30th. It at the, you know, rebound of COVID, what appears to be the rebound of COVID a little bit. And so there's a lot of social distancing that is still a challenge for a lot of businesses. So when you guys are talking about the winters and people being in the store huddled like that, that may not be an option this winter. So does that concern you at all?
It does, for sure. I mean, we haven't had customers into our shop since March as it is.
Okay.
So yeah, we've not let anyone inside. We just developed a new window so they could order from the window and pick up from a window without having to actually come into contact with us or come inside to the small space.
Smart. Yeah.
So that's worked because of the warmer weather and then the miraculous extension that we're having right now of the warmer weather.
Yeah.
So it's working okay, but as it gets colder soon, we have to start thinking about changing that yet again and closing up that window potentially, and then allowing for, you know, two or three people to come in at a time. And of course that deters people, because who wants to wait outside in the winter for who knows, you know, even if it is 3-4 minutes, it can still be a bit of a pain. So
yeah,
we're again at that point where we have to start thinking very quickly about what we're going to do next.
Well, and you guys have had a tremendous success in capitalizing on deliveries, right? So that was something that really started to take off, from what I understand. Once COVID hit, you kind of doubled down on running around the city, dropping off ice cream, right?
Which was never in our business plan to include deliveries.
Yeah, we were very fortunate that our pivot happened. We were for sure one of the very first to close our doors and then reevaluate for 2 seconds and decide on deliveries and curbside. So coming out of that, I think we were very fortunate that people saw us do that right away. Mm-hmm. And we remain relevant through that, through what would become a delivery. Everybody would do delivery and everybody would do curbside, but we were just fortunate to be on the front of that curve.
Yep.
And people saw us do it and knew that we were there for that. And we do believe that if things remain the same now, that will be our formula or part of our formula moving forward for these cold months coming.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, a couple things I'd like to unpack there too is on social media, I saw you have a sponsor for the vehicle that you guys are using for running around doing these deliveries.
We did at the end. Yeah, it wasn't throughout the whole time. Jason did all the deliveries in our own vehicle for the majority, probably for the first 8 weeks, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
And then
Lexus was very generous and allowed us to use one of their cars to zip around the city and do deliveries in. But it was great. It obviously saves us the headache of driving around our own vehicle and kind of doing more work than needed. So it was really great. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, a little bit of luxury as you're doing those deliveries. Yeah. So I'm just curious, how did that come about? I think the viewers would be interested to know how a collaboration with Lexus originated.
Well, we actually are old customers of theirs, and they always offer great customer service. And we did actually watch them during COVID help out small local businesses. And we reached out to our friend our sales rep and friend and customer out there. And we asked, what are the chances of getting a little bit of a relief from using your own vehicle?
Yeah.
And they didn't hesitate at all. So
no.
It was, you know, they didn't want anything in return. They just wanted to help. So it was really nice.
I'd imagine they got a few pints of ice cream.
Yeah. Maybe we got some cookies out of it. Yeah.
Okay, that's really neat. And I think that's a lesson there too, is that collaborations can occur, but you have to be bold enough, you know, to ask it or make those initial outreaches. And if you don't, you're not going to get it right at all. And so I love the fact that you guys did that you guys reached out and said, you know, this might be an interesting partnership. You guys have such a great following on social media as well. That's going to introduce their brand to potentially a new set of people that they wouldn't have been able to reach before. And so actually, speaking of that, you're the social media platforms that have been the most successful for you has been Instagram by far, right?
For sure. It's where we do the majority of our posting about any information about the businesses, and it trickles into Facebook, but we noticed that the Facebook isn't as heavy traffic. It is a different group of people though, for sure. So we do use both. Twitter, you know what, I dropped the ball on that one. I think it's just because I didn't have time to do any posting there. I'll have to still figure that one out. I know Jason wants us on all the platforms. We thought about TikTok because it's so popular for another demographic that we don't reach, but apparently they reached us without us knowing.
Apparently we're very popular on TikTok, but we get told all the time, but we're not sure what's happening over there.
I think it's just our customers doing videos with whatever.
Yeah,
that's fantastic when you have that, you know, an audience or a community that loves you and are talking about you in other platforms and that. So that's a really funny story that you guys are popular, but you're not actually even on it. So, but I think there's also a lesson here too for a lot of entrepreneurs, and that is exactly what you said, Aylin, in that it takes time, right? Like it's really difficult to do it all and to be on all the different platforms, as much as it would be nice to have reach across a lot of those different platforms because the audiences could be slightly different. The challenge when you're running a business, when you're, you know, have the test kitchen, you're trying out all these crazy new recipes and stuff and trying to manage deliveries and staffing and so on, you can't do it all. And so you pick a channel that will work well for you. And I think Instagram is a great one in terms of just the visibility of it. A lot of your creations are just so colorful, right? And everybody loves, you know, food or food porn on the social media, right? And so Instagram is a great place for that. And TikTok, if I was going to encourage you guys to take on an additional platform, it would be TikTok that I would encourage you to take a look at. But outside of that, sticking with Instagram, and now with Instagram Reels, you kind of get the same TikTok kind of feel over there now too. Yeah, so
we did come across something like that.
Yeah. So just a curiosity on that in terms of follower counts and that, where are you guys at now approximately in
Instagram? So we're at 20,000 followers now. And with the stats that we looked at yesterday, actually, there's about 76% in Edmonton, whatever it trickled down into Calgary, Sherwood Park, Vancouver, into the smaller percentages, but for the majority, we're pretty happy that it is local.
Everything that we've done with Instagram, Facebook, and otherwise has been all organic growth. We're not out there often giving away free items. We're not purchasing followers. We're meeting people and they're spreading the word as naturally as possible, and it's recognizable. Eileen does all of the social media, and there's a direct correlation daily between what we post and what items get sold. So it's very interesting to us. There's we'll post something that we've had from day one, but just haven't posted it in quite some time. It'll be like it's a brand new item. Like, oh my goodness, you have ube ice cream and a black cone, like we're on our way. So it's very interesting, but it's been a huge benefit to us not having the money to pay for professional advertising or marketing. It's allowed us to just say what we want and post what we want, and it's been received very positively so far.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things that, again, a lot of entrepreneurs, small businesses struggle with, is trying to find their voice on social media. And so what I really encourage them to do is not try to be anything but themselves, right? So don't think that there's some sort of template out there that you have to follow. The key is to be really authentic and real with your audience, real with who you are and what your business is about and the values that you that stand behind, and you know, the reason for your being, like why you're there and so on. And that's the part about social media that other people will you know, latch onto and really get excited about, because it is real, and that's what is wanted or needed within those platforms. The advertising side of it, yeah, you can do other things in that realm, but for social, if you really want that engagement and that following, you just have to be yourself. And you guys have done a fantastic job of that. So kudos to you guys on figuring that out, and or maybe just stumbling upon it, whichever way it was, it's working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't actually know.
Yeah, you know what, we
a little bit of both.
A lot of people come and they ask about our Instagram, and we always say, if you go back to day one, it reads like a story. So exactly what you're saying, like if they were to go back, they can read and they could essentially get caught up on where we are today, because that's how we post. It's very personal, or has become very personal to us.
Yeah.
And we do interact with a lot of people behind the scenes in the direct messages, and kind of all ourselves. So it's been very, very positive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about a pivot that you guys made this spring. And so I believe this was happening prior to COVID hitting. And this is the food truck or the ice cream truck. So tell me a little bit about what your thinking was there and how that's turned out for you.
Well, in true form of doing things on the fly, this was the exact same thing. It actually wasn't before COVID. It was
during.
So it was that April, May, probably.
Yeah, the end of April, the beginning of May.
Where we were just actually brainstorming for next summer and what we could do. And we thought, well, we have all these flavors, these new flavors that we can't, or that we just don't sell in the shop other than in pint form. Like we can't do certain flavors in soft serve. So we thought, well, how could we get these flavors out to people without having to become a scoop shop? Because we wanted to stay as the soft serve shop. So we thought, well, let's, maybe we could do a trailer or an ice cream truck. And then very quickly, Jason pretty much found a truck through some friends at Jackie O's donut food truck. Mm-hmm. They recommended somebody, got us in touch with somebody in
Saskatchewan. And it escalated extremely fast from there. We had family go out and look at a truck for us out there. They gave the thumbs up as best as they could. We had a friend who owns a trucking company in Saskatchewan, hauled it to Edmonton, inspected, and then everybody told us we were crazy to think that we would hit the streets this year taking a brand new old Purolator truck and stripping it down and turning it into what we dreamed would be a ice cream scooping truck. They were even more surprised when we said we could do it, we thought, in 4 weeks. we decided to try, and we didn't meet the 4 week. It was 5 weeks.
Not bad.
It was a huge learning curve. I mean, just like with almost everything, just the way we are, we shoot from the hip and we kind of decide and we go with it. We're both very, very capable.
So normally Jason and I work together every day. So when he was out working on the truck for the 5 weeks, it was just me holding down everything at the shop, and it was incredibly stressful for both of us to be divided like that. Usually we
we always I guess in a bigger setting we'd call it a meeting in the morning. We always kind of focus and kind of decide how we're going to conquer the day. It was quite different for that 5 weeks. So it was stressful for sure, but we had, again, only what we had to invest in this truck, which is nothing. I guess we were rolling the dice mm-hmm. again and gambling that people would enjoy the flavors that we've previously sold in pint. We've never scooped any of the flavors ever for anybody. They've had to just commit to a pint of it or just decide. So we were risking quite a bit by choosing to do this.
But it's turned out good, right? So you were saying that that was a great pivot, as it turned out, through COVID, because you were able to get to different parts of the city and really increase sales then, right?
For sure. I, you know, just circling back to, you know, having a number of Instagram followers, people always think, oh, you'll be continuously busy because you have this amount of followers. And that's just not true. Like those numbers don't equate to dollars, essentially. Mm. It comes down to the people who want to come into the shop. And because of COVID, you know, having the shop closed and people not wanting to go out as much, that our numbers certainly went down. And then with, you know, you have other things to contend with, like weather, things that we don't have control over. The shop wasn't as busy as we would have liked it to have been this summer. But having the truck and being able to go to where customers are or closer to them certainly helped, for sure.
Yeah. So now, so that was quite a pivot, the pivot to the delivery. And actually, I just wanted to circle back to that one a little bit. You guys chose not to do Skip or Uber Eats, right? Instead of doing it yourself.
Just for us, we couldn't afford it. We just couldn't afford 30% or thereabouts, plus or minus. We just couldn't afford it. It just wasn't.
It didn't make sense for us.
It didn't make sense. We've always had one of those platforms in our shop, mm-hmm. And we didn't advertise it often. If people stumbled on it, I don't think we ever advertised it, but we always had one of those that there was several options that they could choose from, but we never ever advertised it. We always just kept it there just in case. Mm-hmm. And then when COVID happened, it was the just in case. And we realized very quickly that it was just not going. We just couldn't afford to be producing our products, which are already reasonably priced. And it is why we do see so many returning customers. We're continuously from day one, we hover daily at about the 50% returning customer. So when we check our square at the end of the day, we can see that 50% every single day have come back. So there is just the reason they come back is because we have a quality product and we have a fair price that people are able to bring their family again and again. It's not,
Like a $13 dessert that you can't really have every week.
You can actually consume it, right? And so what 30% increase in your cost to cover off that, or I mean increase in your rates, is going to have a significant impact on that value proposition for your customers if you guys
we couldn't even do it. We couldn't increase the price on these things. It would just be ridiculous almost.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people that don't realize just how much of a tax, essentially, the delivery services can be. And so at the same time, it's convenient for you guys, convenient for the customer, but it's also, you know, somebody's got to pay for it in there. And so taking that, the road of doing the deliveries yourself, as long as you've got enough quantity there, you can make sense out of driving around the city and doing it. And mm-hmm. and with those innovative partnerships and so on, it makes it a little bit easier too, I suppose. So that's I just wanted to address that, because there's a lot of businesses out there that are struggling with that as well, and they're not too sure which direction they should be going. And then there's also a lot of consumers out there that don't realize it. And so if you do have the opportunity to patronize our local businesses without using Skip or without using Uber Eats, definitely do so, because that's a significant chunk of money that's coming out. It's really, the businesses aren't making any money at that point. Mm-hmm. They're probably just barely covering their costs. And so you want to, you know, if you're into supporting local, support them directly as much as possible. Now,
just to interrupt you there. Not to say that you shouldn't, because there are a lot of small businesses that we know that don't have a choice. They can't do their own deliveries, right? So that's why they do use those platforms. And you don't want to, if somebody wants to support local or a small mom and pop shop, and that is their only way to get that food, then definitely do use it, right?
Yeah.
But knowing that it does cost them, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Now, there's another trend that's happening that's in some of the other cities in the U.S., and I think we're going to start to see it becoming more popular here, and that's the concept of the ghost kitchen. And I know, Jason, in a previous conversation that you and I had, you've been kind of watching this development a little bit as well. Do you want to walk us through your thoughts on that, and maybe just let the define what that is for the audience?
For me, I do believe just watching what's taken place just right now with deliveries and such, I do believe if small business can get together, your local, whether it's burger place, ice cream, noodles, essentially little one-stop shop, but with a local mindset. I know some of the ghost kitchens that are popping up here are more chain related. So it's easier for them to hand off or bring their recipes into one location and have kind of a line cook cooking it. But I believe coming out of this one way or another, I think those ideas are the future, whether it's a food hall that is a one-stop shop of several of your favorite things, or whether it is more of a ghost style kitchen. I believe that that's the future. And I think the sooner we get on board with that, I think it's the way it's going to go. I think whether it be for retail space or it's just, we've learned we don't need those huge restaurants, those huge spaces anymore. It's just not necessary. People, whether they're picking up or everything, they want some variety and they want it quickly. I think it's the way to go. We think about it often on how we could be a part of something like that. So
well, knowing your guys' collaborative nature, I suspect that there could be something around the corner. And so for you other food service businesses that are out there in the local Edmonton area, if any of that interests you, I definitely encourage you to reach out to Jason, because I think there could be something in the works. Okay, so for those of you who don't know what a ghost kitchen is, it's basically a number of brands that are preparing their food in the same kitchen. So down in the US in some large markets like New York, we're seeing Uber Eats basically just hire a line cook and a few other people in a virtual kitchen, essentially. And so there's no sit-in, no eating areas that you can go in and actually purchase the food from. It's all online through their app that you purchase it under their brand of, say, a Japanese restaurant, or they might have some other made-up brand for, you know, a Chinese restaurant or a Western cuisine or some sort of French cuisine or ice cream. And so what they're doing is they're looking at the data to see what is moving through their app the most, and then they'll create those dishes, create a brand around it, and sell that then on their marketplace on Uber Eats. And so we're starting to see that happen in other markets as well. And so what Jason was just suggesting is maybe from a local standpoint, the writing's kind of on the wall that people, that this will probably come in. And so maybe from a local perspective, we can be doing something here under local brands, as opposed to having, you know, these outside big international companies coming in and taking advantage of that situation that's happening where people are ordering a lot more food from home. So anyway, I just want to give you a little background on what those ghost kitchens are. So if you are interested in collaborating with Yellowed on something like that, that might be an opportunity. So reach out to Jason. Okay, so just want to wrap up here, I guess. So any last words in terms of things that maybe you learned along the way that were really impactful that our audience of other entrepreneurs might find useful? Or if you had to do it over again, what would you do slightly different? Those are always some interesting learnings.
I think we've realized for us, it's always been, we've lived in Alberta and you live in Alberta, so you know potentially where customer service has gone in the last how many years. I know that my grandfather, when he operated his restaurant, it's been closed for 30 years, and to this day you can still go on Facebook or on the internet and people still talk about his customer service, the quality of ingredients. So it's been fully closed. So people remember that, and that's what we wanted to bring back. And our recommendation to anybody opening a business, whether it's retail, restaurant, no matter what, focus on customer service. Make sure that the culture that you have in your business, from your employees, everybody who comes in that door can feel it or should feel that they're important. And that's what we believe. And I believe that will be the driving force in the success of any small business, no matter what it is. Pay attention to what your customer wants. And we believe in our business anyways, that the customer essentially is always right. It's ice cream. There's no reason that anybody should be walking away from ice cream without having a great smile or something to think back on as far as nostalgia or a feeling that they'll have when they think back on it. So that would be, I think, our advice. Just make sure that you're aware of your customers' feelings towards everything that you're doing.
Excellent. So, well, I want to thank you guys both for sticking around here today and sharing some of your story and providing some advice and some lessons here for everybody who might be listening to this episode. So thank you once again, Jason and Aylin. I really appreciate it. And best of luck as we transition into the winter months. And hopefully everything's going to go real smoothly for you guys. And we'll be able to have some people socially distanced in the store real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, so that's a wrap, I guess. So everybody, if you're looking for other episodes, we have some other entrepreneur stories over on the website, as well as some advice on what you can do to improve your marketing and hopefully generate more business for your venture, whatever that might be. And so if you want to head over to amplimedia.com/amplify to access all of those archived episodes. And I certainly hope that you'll tune into another one real soon. Take care, everybody.